This is a recording of the MSK Reform Manifesto for Reform. Reforming MSK, improving outcomes, changing lives. Originally published in October 2019. Read by Director Jack Chu, Deputy Director Felicity Thau, Chapter Authors and Associate Directors Emma Salt, Paula Deacon, Rena Patel, Anne Green, Matthew Wyatt, and Ashley James. Our story. Between June 2014 and June 2017, a feedback loop had formed around the musculoskeletal MSK physiotherapy interview show, the Physio Matters podcast, and its surrounding social media. Having a podcast in common often helped the 20,000 plus clinicians, patients, educators, and policymakers to involve themselves in discussions, even around topics infamous for causing conversation breakdown. Choose Health, the Manchester-based healthcare company responsible for the podcast, partnered with Newcastle-based healthcare company Connect Health to host an event that they hoped would channel this energy. 50 invitees discussed a variety of topics central to contemporary MSK practice at the inaugural event, Reasoning, Responsibility and Reform. The event was a huge success, and interest beyond the room was clear from the immediately trending hashtag, the Big R's, which the resultant movement has subsequently been known as. A further invitational event in May 2018 saw 100 innovators in the field look to identify mechanisms for change as they explored the question of whether a reformative agenda was emerging from the discussions on and offline. Following this event and a further 150-strong conference in November 2018, it was clear that there was momentum behind the movement. The collective was also privileged to have the involvement of many great leaders, five of which were selected to head up the individual working groups made up of 10 volunteers for a bold new project. The five working groups, consisting of clinicians, patients, students, educators, and policymakers, sought to identify what reforms would be best to facilitate improvements in MSK patient outcomes. They did so across the topics of evidence, governance, education, excellence, and influence. Hashtag the Big R's, a previously unused hashtag, was seen by 34.1 million social media users in 1 week in 2018, turning the heads of senior civil servants, members of parliament, major company CEOs, and most importantly, many hopeful MSK patients. Hashtag the Big R's has come to represent reform by way of discussion, persuasion, and consensus rather than legislative force. It is a truly inclusive grassroots movement involving a diverse group of people with the common goal of reforming MSK practice for the betterment of patient care.
Introduction. I'm delighted to introduce the MSKR Manifesto for Reform, the product of an innovative two-year project which I feel demonstrates grassroots support for a reformative agenda in MSK practice. The MSKR Manifesto for Reform is a culmination of 2 years of work contributed to by over 200 interesting, unique individuals who are willing to make a stand against the industry that has been sluggish to adapt to the contemporary challenges that MSK practice faces. Simple reforms could position MSK care where it deservedly belongs, at the heart of wider healthcare innovations. When reading this manifesto, I invite you to ask yourself the following question on a regular basis. If we were to enact these policies, would MSK practice improve? If yes, I hope you'll join our movement. If no, I hope you'll help us to refine it. This manifesto is a consensus of opinion which lays out ideas as points of principle. It has a declared focus on why we need reform and what reforms we propose. The pages of instruction and hours of transcripts detailing how we can enact these reforms are not contained in this already lengthy document. The MSKR contributors are famed for being people of action, and so there's been no shortage of planning and strategy. If you would like specific detail regarding next steps, please get in touch, as you are asking just the right questions. You'll read of a royal we throughout the manifesto, so allow me to introduce you by way of thanks to the incredible people who have made this innovative project come to life. I would like to thank my ever-patient team at Choose Health, who continue to both support and challenge me and my mad ideas with an amazing combination of professional tact and good humour. To my co-authors, Emma, Paula, Rena, Matthew, and Ashley, it has truly been an honor to work with you on this project. Your vision and leadership inspired this document, and having witnessed how you have brought your chapters together, I will forever aspire to emulate your expertise. To our working group and event contributors, the time and effort you have committed to this project will go down in history, and I hope that this manifesto does you proud. To the leadership team of our sponsors, Connect Health, thank you for your belief, encouragement, and understanding. Few organizations could have kept faith in and kept up with such a dynamic project. To MSKR Deputy Director, Felicity Thau, your attention to detail is as incredible as your patience. This, my friend, may well be our best co-creation since my undergraduate dissertation. And finally, to you, our readers, thank you for your time in reading this work, which I have so enjoyed bringing together for you. I hope you found it persuasive enough to consider signing your name in support and joining the movement at mskreform.org.uk. Without you, we can go no further. A significant development over the course of the Big R's project has been the collective realization that our analysis and suggested reforms are applicable beyond the initial target of MSK physiotherapy. I've been pleased to hear from professionals and patients from a wide variety of backgrounds who have assisted the realization that MSK practice is in fact the target. The policies detailed in the MSKR Manifesto for Reform are widely applicable across disciplines, but at times concentrate on MSK physiotherapy as a best test case. As it stands, physiotherapists are the largest provider of MSK care in the UK, and I feel we are best placed to lead MSK reforms, providing we remain outward-looking and inclusive with patients' best interests at the heart of our decision-making. Throughout my career, I've been accused of rocking the boat, a metaphor suggesting agitation, disruption, and challenge of the status quo. I'm far from offended by this, but I've long reflected on how this expression is so often used to describe me and the projects I'm involved in, so allow me to indulge the metaphor. If I'm in a boat, I'm blessed with an incredible crew. We have a destination in mind, but the sea is inherently rough. The engines and other low-effort options have failed, and the winds are against us. So if my boat is rocking, it's because we're paddling so damn hard. Agitation, disruption, and irritation are secondary consequences, not primary intentions. We do not profess to be reinventing the wheel, and we recognize and credit the giants of our industry whose shoulders we stood on to be here today. But we do speak with confidence in saying that the MSKR Manifesto for Reform is the best effort of many passionate clinicians, patients, educators, researchers, and policymakers to demonstrate consensus in a time of disagreement, unity in a time of division, and bravery in a time of cowardice. The actions to be taken from this work do not fall on one specific organization or stakeholder group. The suggested reforms are evidence-informed, pragmatic, and implementable, but require a combination of mass support and specific lobbying to achieve. We call upon all stakeholder groups to move forward with the proposed reforms that they are best placed to implement and to support the wider cause to ensure a balanced distribution of responsibility. If I was looking for signatures from people who agreed with 100% of this manifesto, I wouldn't even get my own. This is an authentic collaboration with adjustments and compromises laced throughout. We welcome challenge, invite your critique, and look forward to refining this work together for future editions. But for now, please ask yourself, if we were to enact these policies, would MSK practice improve?
This is Chapter 1, Reforming Our Relationship with Evidence. The author of this chapter is myself, Emma Salt, and the working group contributors are Gilletta Belton, Faye Carpenter, Andrew Cuff, Joe Gibson, Rebecca Hunter, Roger Kerry, Matt Lowe, Rory McIntyre, Adam Meekins, Brad Neal, Lorna Owens, Kate Purcell, John Room, Ronald Todd, Tom Walker, and Callum Wright. So evidence-based practice is a process of care centred around three pillars. First, the patient's values and preferences. Second, clinical experience and expertise. And third, applicable scientific evidence. So modern-day evidence-based practice strives to optimise safer, more consistent and cost-effective care that is patient-centred. The value of evidence-based practice within clinical practice is something consistently recognised as important by physiotherapists and other musculoskeletal practitioners. But there still appears to be a wide variation in its implementation. Evidence-based practice should depend on relatively equal weighting of all three of the above of the aforesaid pillars. Patterns in practice of individual clinicians working autonomously have shown to be strongly influenced by their experience, even when robust contrasting evidence on effectiveness is well publicised. While there are certainly advantages to autonomous practice, and an individual clinician experience will be subject to inherent bias and could therefore lead to suboptimal provision of care and unwanted clinical variation. Potential barriers to embracing the remaining two pillars, which I'll remind you are patient values and scientific evidence, have been reported to include insufficient time within a standard clinical workload, lack of clinical appraisal skills, and difficulty in understanding the scientific literature. Additional contemporary barriers also include the volume of emergent literature and conflicting results, inequitable access to literature, and inconsistent training opportunities. The rationale, therefore, for this work was to consider the ideals of evidence-based practice and how to implement it in the world of musculoskeletal care. This chapter is a summary of a fully referenced mixed methodology study that was triangulated with published literature and information from public facing forums and events, all of which is available online and as an open access download. So MSKR's Reform Evidence Working Group have carried out a broad analysis of the perceived issues affecting evidence-based practice. This chapter proposes changes to the MSK industry's relationship with evidence and comprises a set of policies addressing the following key themes: to support an evidence-based culture, to reduce unwarranted variation in clinical practice, to address measurement and accountability, to narrow the clinical academic divide, and finally, to enhance patient-centered decision-making. So, section one is first looking at developing an evidence-informed culture. It has been well reported that the culture within an organisation is essentially for implementation of evidence-based practice. By promoting an evidence-based culture, we can reduce the use of treatments with low efficacy whilst engaging in research to better our future practice. We cannot achieve this if the tools to build the culture are blunted by managerialism or hidden by layers of bureaucracy. So an MSKR survey respondent says, managerial priorities are mainly regarding waiting times and clinical capacity. Improving individual clinical effectiveness is giving low priority. Audit of clinical practice and time for professional development are not carried out on a regular basis. So, solution one, MSKR advocate a rollout of the Oxford evidence-based practice framework with each clinician involved, with each clinician's involvement evidenced in personal appraisals and integrated into performance measures. Based on the framework used by Oxford by Karen Barker, evidence-based culture in the workplace can be achieved by enabling all staff to be actively involved in research, but at different levels of engagement. This could be in one of the three strands. Firstly, actively involved in research. An example of that would be a clinician having an NIHR fellowship or research schemes or charitable funds, split posts shared between research and clinical practice, or involvement in national clinical guidance. An example of someone being actively supporting research would be colleagues being involved in portfolio work. And thirdly, an example of someone demonstrating evidence-based practice would be them involved in a critically appraised topic, evaluating research or guidelines in an area of their clinical specialism, or demonstrating how this has changed their practice through audit or service evaluation. So to our policies. Policy two. is the next policy, and that is MSKR will aim for all MSK service providers to ensure at least 5% of clinical staff's working week is for protected learning time. That equates to approximately 2 hours of full-time equivalent. And this should be annualised and stated in job descriptions. So the actual protected learning time allocated will vary depending on the operational demand and service design. We advocate for a national standard of a minimum protected learning time and feel that a figure of 5%, which is approximately 50% of that afforded to UK GPs in their contracts of employment, is a pragmatic starting point and a reasonable minimum. Protected learning time needs to be built into job planning and respected as a negotiating metric by service leads. We propose 5% is exclusive of statutory and mandatory training in order to incentivise services to efficiently utilise clinician time with digital and combined training. So to policy number three. Policy number three is MSKR propose a move to cooperative contracts between universities and service providers for each MSK service employing 20 or more clinical staff. So what do we mean by this? It is proposed that there should be an increased focus on collaborative partnerships between local MSK services and universities. We feel this is a key mechanism for promoting evidence-informed care in clinical services and in reflecting contemporary MSK practice in the academic setting. It is believed that a culture of openness will facilitate learning for students and educators alike. So we have a quote from Rory McIntyre, which is, "Educators should be understanding that students are simply trying to learn and that every physiotherapist should be open to questioning. This is healthy. If students are supported on placements to question, such as their practice, without fear of worsening relationships with educators, who they obviously depend on for grades and constructive feedback, then they have the opportunity to be at the forefront of championing the evidence-based culture in physiotherapy practice." So too, policy number four, MSKR will encourage universities to grant full literature access to a named research champion in all services employing 20 or more clinical MSK staff. It has been demonstrated that MSK professionals prefer to use their colleagues as a source of information with a trusted individual that is accessible. We feel that this will reduce the oft-stated barrier of poor literature access for clinicians and patients. Section 2 is all about reducing unwarranted variation in clinical practice. In order for MSK care to be patient-centred, some variation in healthcare provision should be expected due to the inevitable differences in individual patient needs. This type of variation is positive. Unwarranted variation in healthcare, however, is variation that cannot be explained by patient need and offers no benefit to outcomes. Unwarranted variation is unacceptable as it wastes resources, duplicates work, and provides lower value care to patients. A quote by Gilletta Belton, who's a patient contributor to this chapter. Gilletta says, "What matters to me as a patient is that my clinician knows the evidence for the conditions they treat and the treatments they offer, and also that they know how to apply the evidence to me, a unique individual. In order to reduce unwarranted variation, we propose more widespread adoption of the synthesized research evidence through clinical practice guidelines to form the building blocks of our understanding of the efficacy of treatments. Guidelines have been criticised as being over-prescriptive, but if used judiciously in conjunction with individual critical thinking, they can enhance patient care. To achieve this, MSKR will conduct a public campaign to MSK practitioners across the UK using roadshows, podcasts, social media influences, and by having meaningful presence at professional forums and conferences. Moving to policy number five relating to unwarranted clinical variation in practice is MSKR will promote the need for additional NICE guidelines relating to MSK disorders. Currently, there are very few NICE guidelines relating to MSK care. NICE recognised that MSK is an area for future development, and MSKR will therefore work with NICE to keep this area high on their agenda through already established links to bring about changes for the better MSK healthcare. To improve translation of best practice, one suggestion is that the guidelines are developed in an easy-to-digest way to provide busy clinicians with a quick and effective resource. One such way would be to develop guidance at a glance documents in which recommendations can be condensed to a single slide of paper. Current and somewhat underutilised resources such as the NICE's clinical knowledge summaries could be more widely adopted. Policy number 6. MSKR propose an increased use of knowledge translation strategies. Knowledge translation strategies have been shown to be effective in improving evidence-based practice if they are developed and implemented at a local level. Communities of good practice can develop and have already formed around the MSKR movement and others. In these groups, a number of individuals with shared interests collaborate to address issues around EBP. An example of this working well is the Musculoskeletal Research Facilitation Group at Keele University. MSKR will work to promote more of these knowledge translation strategies through networking with new universities across the UK. Policy number 7. The MSKR Reforming Evidence Working Group will be available for consultation with MSKR spokespeople, journalists and members of the public interested in the wider promotion of best practice. The MSK industry can and should better engage with wider stakeholders to promote public awareness of best practice and to empower patients to ask for the best evidence-based care. Utilising a shared decision-making and the CSP's back MythBusters are positive examples of this. Moving on to Section 3. Section 3 is all about measurement and accountability. So in the introduction, we referenced the three accepted pillars of evidence-based practice, which were the patient and their values, the clinician's expertise, and the scientific evidence. Right, so in keeping with our policies, and given that service audit contributes to an evidence-informed culture, we suggest that the fourth pillar proposed by Ryecroft of Malone in 2004 is also considered, and that is local data and information. A quote by Dr. Graham Wilkes, MSK doctor, says, "If you don't count, you don't count." Teaching critical appraisal skills to health professionals improves knowledge, but there is a lack of quality evidence as to whether it changes the processes of care or patient outcomes. From our qualitative analysis, it was apparent that there was a perceived need to demonstrate the value of research to organisations so that it is seen a worthwhile investment. One potential solution is to capture and evaluate patient outcomes to demonstrate clinical and cost effectiveness. Policy number 8 is relating to that. This is MSKR advocating mandating the universal use of patient-orientated outcome measures in UK MSK healthcare. The inconsistency of outcome measure collection and resultant difficulties evidencing service success is proving to be a major issue affecting UK services in an era of commissioning reforms. Implementing the routine capture of patient outcomes within service design and the consequent use of those outcomes to provide both individual feedback and to inform service improvement is integral to future progress. Pockets of good practice in this area, rather than adherence to universal standards, only widen the quality gap and oft-met postcode lottery. The development of real-world data and large data sets would significantly help to move the profession forward and improve inter-service comparability. On review of the literature for the universal MSK outcome measures, MSK recommend that the patient-specific functional scale, also known as the PSFS, and the musculoskeletal health questionnaire, also known as the MSKHQ, are adopted. Policy number 9, MSKR support Clinical Audit Awareness Week and pledges to produce specific MSK service audit resources as well as examples of MSK service audits to coincide with a clinical audit awareness week on an annual basis. We are delighted to be able to support an established and successful system and advocacy framework. Free resources are available from the Clinical Audit Support Centre, aim to help define a topic, decide on what metrics, capture data, set a standard, feedback the findings, create actions and measure the impact. We feel that this could and should involve all staff within a service, thus creating an evidence-based practice culture whilst developing the skills required for a regular audit, comparison and wider sharing of the data. Moving on to section four, which is all about narrowing the clinical academic divide. Barriers exist for clinicians wishing to access research. It could be argued that there is little responsibility or incentive for clinicians to be actively involved in research in many NHS and private MSK providers across the UK. This is unlike other clinical disciplines, such as medicine, where responsibility to be involved in research has long been established. So policy number 10 is MSKR advocate for the development and more clinical academic posts across the UK. Split posts, which means where the employee is employed in part by one organisation, such as an NHS trust, to fulfil a clinical responsibility, and in part by another organisation, such as a university, to fulfil research and training commitments, are proposed as a means of improving clinician involvement in research. As outlined earlier in this chapter, the benefits of cooperative contracts and closer links between institutions are numerous. Additionally, it is in the best interest of all stakeholders for those with an aptitude for and an interest in clinical practice and research to work across both sites. Policy number 11. MSKR proposed the development of an up-to-date directory of resources for MSK funding streams. A significant challenge facing any aspiring researcher is the acquisition of funding. A live directory of resources could help establish the types of funds that are available from a variety of organisations. This directory would include brief descriptions of funds available, eligibility criteria, closing dates, website links, and recommendations from previously successful applicants. Policy number 12. MSKR support the proliferation of open access journals and will lobby for a reform business model to improve clinicians' access to evidence. When applying for research funding, we propose that costing for publication within an open access journal should be considered as a required step, and in turn, researchers should submit to an open access journal as a preferred option. We also recognise the challenges faced by small specialist journals who rely on subscription funding, which is why we lobby for a reform business model across the sector to better distribute resources in a fairer manner. This conversation is long overdue, and MSK professionals could lead the line on improving access due to the crossover appeal of the discipline. Patient-centred decision-making. Modern healthcare reforms place patient-centred decision-making at the heart of good practice. Clinicians must be able to align research skills, clinical reasoning, and communication skills to offer patients informed choices about the management in a way that reconciles with the person's values. Our qualitative analysis findings suggest that brief patient contact time, as well as inconsistencies in training, are barriers to creating an environment conducive to consolidating the evidence base with a patient-centred decision-making. This is in line with literature findings and resulted in suggestions for further training within a biopsychosocial framework, incorporating critical thinking, communication and soft skills to facilitate good clinical practice. Now, a quote from Gilletta Benton, patient contributor, says, "The only way evidence can be incorporated successfully into care is to know the individual who is being treated and to understand that their story, their experiences are important data too." Policy number 13. MSKR propose accessible mechanisms for patients to contribute to service audits and research projects relevant to their condition, circumstances, and interest. It is becoming increasingly commonplace for patients and the public to be involved in research project developments and guideline development. And this is good. It is less common, however, to involve the patients and public in research implementation, local service changes, and local commissioning pathways. We advocate improving patients in all stages of research and its implementation. Policy number 14. MSKR support the integration of patients into decision-making structures in order to improve patient-centered care and governance in MSK services. Whilst a step in the right direction, we fear that integration of the patient voice in research planning and design is too often tokenistic. True patient-centered care would involve top-to-bottom integration of public stakeholders whose experience interacting with the MSK industry has provided many of the prerequisites for expertise. MSKR therefore support the development of roles such as the patient director within the Sussex MSK partnership. So a quote by Joletta Belton, our patient contributor to this chapter, says, "Listening to patient stories and reading qualitative literature gives us insights to what living with musculoskeletal conditions is like, what helps and what doesn't from the patient's point of view, which can lead to more relevant research questions and successful clinical approaches." To finish, I have a quote also by Joletta Belton regarding evidence, and that is, "What matters to me as a patient is that my clinician knows the evidence for the conditions they treat and the treatments they offer, and also that they know how to apply that evidence to me, a unique individual." By the way, that last quote was embedded within the main document.
Chapter 2, Reforming Clinical Governance, by Paula Deacon, and working group contributors Carly Gibson, James Midgley, Charlie Park, Tina Price, Helen Robson, Tom Shelton, Simon Smith. A quote by Jack Chu, MSKR Director. "We should aspire to a system through which we're accountable for continuously improving the quality of professionals and services by creating an environment in which excellence in clinical care will flourish. Much like the kitchen in a restaurant, the underlying governance structure that supports an industry can be the cornerstone of success or the cause of catastrophic failure. Only dishes prepared with precision, skill, planning and teamwork win critical acclaim. When food of this standard is sent out into the restaurant, it is the culmination of a process of development that cannot be seen on the plate, but without which standards would vary. When aiming for success, one has to first avoid failure. Food poisoning of one individual is a major negative event. Food poisoning of several is worse. Food poisoning across several restaurants who share a supplier is worse still. In this example, there might only be one safety error each time, but the point in the chain where the error occurs is relevant to the scale of the consequences. Let's take this further and consider the agencies that are responsible for upholding the legal food standard safety standards and those who investigate incidences such as in the example. Imagine the scale of food poisoning that could occur if the regulations were lax and the investigations complacent. The differences between critical acclaim and catastrophic failure are the systems that govern safety and excellence. When equivalent safety and quality errors are made in MSK practice, the consequences are often less overtly obvious and certainly less measurable, but seldom less significant. Additionally, in the food industry example, a market force will exert itself due to the reputational damage caused by a food poisoning incident. In MSK practice, most errors are more subtle. Public expectation is less defined and long-term outcomes are less likely to influence public behaviour than short-term consequences. Therefore, market forces are unlikely to positively drive standards. Initially, coming to prominence in the NHS following the Bristol Heart scandal in the 1990s, clinical excellence was proposed as a system through which health service organisations are accountable for continuously building on the quality of their services and safeguarding high standards of care by creating an environment in which excellence in clinical care will flourish. We live in a high trust society in which there is an implicit assumption that the governance systems beneath the industries on which we rely are safe, credible, universal, regulated, and aspiring to improve. We further assume that professionals within any system are held accountable to the same standards. When we take a closer look at both our MSK systems and the constitute MSK staff, are they fit for purpose? Or is MSK reform indicated? Clinical governance may not be the top of all clinicians' agenda, but may not resonate with all professionals and may not be a subject consistently taught as part of the undergraduate curriculum. Yet it is key to continuously drive quality improvement, which is important for all levels of patient care. Clinical governance needs to become an integral part of a clinician's toolkit and a key component of every clinical service and clinician's life. By doing this, it will underpin everything we do, become part of the clinical service process, and not be seen as additional or challenging. It should be an integral part of setting up a private practice. Physiotherapists make up a significant percentage of the UK MSK workforce and are recognised by the general public to be a trusted profession for the assessment and treatment of MSK conditions. MSK physiotherapy is therefore a good test case for the following question. Is the existing governance of MSK physiotherapists fit for purpose? Physiotherapists play a crucial role in the treatment of MSK disorders, and yet there is huge variation in support for delivering high quality care and best practice from both NHS and private providers. This variation is not only confusing intra-professionally, but also to our key stakeholders, and has been identified as a barrier to providing consistently high quality care. The responsibility for ensuring the quality and safety of healthcare services lies with all involved. MSKR advocate for appropriate distribution of this responsibility to avoid an over-reliance on organisational governance where it exists, and the hopeful complacency regarding individual clinical competency where it does not. Although both the Health and Care Professional Council and the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy set standards to ensure its registrants and members undertake safe and effective practice, there is a lack of validation, monitoring and inspection of services and individuals that leaves physiotherapy practice open to under-regulation. The current processes allow individuals to interpret the standards and regulations freely, which in turn allows large scope for misinterpretation. MSKR recognised that a synergy between bottom-up and top-down contributions is the essential mechanisms for any reform. Clinicians aspire to be better in services that aspire to be better. This chapter will therefore suggest policies to provide public assurance that all MSK services in the UK are continuously providing high quality care, and to provide the public assurance that every MSK clinician they encounter is safe, competent, and continuously delivering high quality care. Creating robust systems. In the field of MSK care, systematic approaches to the promotion of quality improvement are far from ubiquitous. There are certainly organisations that have embedded clinical governance into their delivery model, but there does not appear to be a mechanism for spreading best practice to other organisations or indeed a compelling external driver to mandate or promote this. A quote by Tina Price, patient contributor. As a patient, I feel totally reliant on the clinical governance systems and the regulatory bodies to ensure safe and quality of care for me. I live in hope that the systems are good. Policy 1. MSKR recommend that physiotherapists are included in the CQC list of registrants required to be registered under the regulatory activity of treatment of disease, disorder or injury. The independent regulator of health and social care is the Care Quality Commission, whose role is to register health and adult social care services providers in England and to inspect whether or not standards are being met. The CQC does not require physiotherapists to be registered with them for the regulatory activity of treatment of disease, disorders or injury. On the contrary, physiotherapists are currently listed as being out of the scope of the Health and Social Care Act 2008 for this regulated activity. This means that any standalone treatment services run by physiotherapists are not required to register and therefore will not be inspected by the CQC. Physiotherapists who are licensed to prescribe medication and or deliver injection therapy procedures are also currently not required to register with the CQC. MSKR will lobby for legislation change to the Health and Social Care Act 2008. MSKR recommend that this is also extended to other MSK professionals whilst also recognising the category challenges involved in this. Osteopathy, podiatry and occupational therapy are the fellow allied health professions with significant MSK workforces. On a pragmatic level, extending this policy to these disciplines in the first instance would perhaps encounter fewer barriers. Policy 2. MSKR advocate for the development of an accreditation process from which MSK services can aspire to a quality standard mark. MSKR acknowledge and support examples of voluntary accreditation schemes such as SEQUOSH, that Safe, Effective, Quality Occupational Health Service, which provide independent and formal recognition that occupational health services are competent in delivering services that meet CEQOS standards. CEQOS accreditation is recognised and respected as a badge of quality. We currently have no such MSK accreditation scheme in the UK, and so MSKR will work with partners across disciplines to produce a respected kite mark for MSK services. Policy 3. MSKR propose that all providers of MSK services mandate governance training into their induction programmes and ongoing mandatory training. MSKR support the integration of clinical governance education in every level of MSK courses. Clinical governance frameworks as a method of promoting clinical governance are, in most instances, the responsibility of the provider organisation to implement. A systems approach embedded within service design aims to support and influence clinical behaviour and standards of care. These frameworks are designed to support the individual clinician delivering patient care. But is the individual clinician devoid of responsibility with regards to clinical governance? This should not be the case. In the reverse instance, services without robust clinical governance frameworks are, in theory, completely reliant on the conscientiousness of individual clinicians. Clinical governance education should therefore begin in undergraduate training and thereafter be integral to professional career-long learning. Policy 4. MSKR advocate for the development of a national MSK clinical governance framework which is applicable to all who practice in the MSK speciality. The design of any MSK service should enable every staff member within the organisation to understand and contribute to service issues, processes, safety, and clinical quality. The culture that would underpin this is key and should be one of positivity, openness, and non-blame, whilst also being professional, challenging, and promoting responsibility and accountability. It is clear that all services offering MSK care should be operating within a robust clinical governance framework to drive quality improvement. This framework should ideally have universal applicability across the varying MSK sectors, including NHS services, private MSK organisations, individual practitioners, occupational health providers, and sporting organisations. The setting of MSK services can vary hugely, but the operational standards, accountability, safety, and responsibility towards improvement should show consistent baseline competence and an aspiration towards advancement of quality. MSKR and its partner organisations are well equipped with the knowledge and workforce to create a blueprint of best governance practice. Creating accountable clinicians. A quote by a recently audited physiotherapist. I felt the HCPC continual professional development audit process didn't particularly prove that I am safe or effective physiotherapist. There was a requirement to write about how the evidence submitted proved you were providing an effective service. Luckily, I had a large amount of evidence to submit, but to be honest, I could have made it up. All that the process proved was that I can gather some documents together and write about them in a way that met arbitrary pass-fail threshold. The public not only need assurance that providers and services are safe and consistently delivering high-quality care, but also should be confident that the therapists involved in their care are properly trained, qualified, and competent, will treat them with dignity and respect, not mistreat or harm them, and will endeavour to continuously deliver high-quality care. The HCPC are the statutory regulators for 16 health and care professionals, including physiotherapists. For a physiotherapist to remain on the HCPC register, they go through a re-registration process in order to demonstrate their adherence to the standards set by the HCPC. This re-registration process occurs every 2 years, and the current requirements are a signed professional declaration by the physiotherapist that they have read and will comply with the standards of proficiency, conduct, performance, and ethics, and that they have read and will comply with the standards for CPD. 2.5% of physiotherapy registrants are randomly selected and audited against the following CPD standards. The HCPC views the CPD standards and audits for registrants as a robust process for determining continuing fitness to practice. The justification is that the 16 professions regulated by HCPC are of low risk to the public, and so the requirements are based on right touch regulation principles, which is the minimum regulatory force required to achieve the desired result. However, the HCPC acknowledged that whilst registrants carry low risk of poor competency, they have a high incidence of unprofessional behaviour. Unprofessional behaviour is largely addressed by the HCPC through their fitness to practice investigations and reliance on concerns being raised by members of the public, employers, the police, and other healthcare professionals. We feel it is reasonable to expect that a regulatory body that publicly recognises its registrants are at a high risk of unprofessional behaviour should diligently manage it through its fitness to practice thresholds and processes. However, this does not appear to be the case. The HCPC is regulated by the Professional Standards Authority, PSA, who publish an annual review of the HCPC's performance. In the performance review 2017-18 and 2018-19, there were six standards that the HCPC were failing to meet in the area of fitness to practice. A standout failing highlighted by the PSA is the inconsistent and often inappropriately high threshold for investigations of a fitness to practice case. Since 2006, it has been compulsory to undertake CPD as part of re-registration, but as aforementioned, the process selects relatively few registrants to self-report their activities whilst encouraging the masses to participate in CPD. CPD audit and the self-declaration assessment, both of which form the basis of continuing to practice, are entirely based on self-assessment and lack external validity of the evidence submitted. This makes the process unreliable and open to possible fabrication of submitted evidence. The lack of third-party adjudication also increases the risk that registrants self-certify themselves as meeting minimum standards when they do not. This approach does not safeguard patients or facilitate the integration of evidence-based medicine into practice, nor does it take into account the variation in quality and applicability of CPD courses in MSK practice. Within the audit itself, it is possible the MSK physiotherapists could be grossly underrepresented, and also that many clinicians will go through their careers unaudited. 55,560 physiotherapists are currently on the HCPC register. 2.5% of registrants are selected to submit their CPD profile, which includes physiotherapists from all specialities within the profession. 54,171 practitioners are left unaudited every 2 years. In 2006, the Department of Health commissioned a study to answer the question, what is the evidence for assuring the continuing fitness to practice of Health and Care Professional Council registrants based on its continuing professional development and audit system? The following recommendations were made to the Department of Health by the comprehensive study. These were to review the HCP continuing fitness to practice system with regard to aligning the system with existing parallel systems of staff appraisal. This would ensure congruency and increase the robustness of a system currently based entirely on self-assessment. We anticipate this would increase public confidence. It also recommended to further clarify for the benefit of registrants that the primary aim of the HCPC CPD standards is to drive up the quality of practice and not to identify poor performance. It also suggested considering creating an online facility to enable registrants to log CPD activity to support an audit-ready philosophy. The HCPC should consider contacting employers when registrants are invited to be audited and request that time be provided to ensure registrants have time to compile their CPD profile. A further recommendation was to request that as a standard, all CPD profiles should be validated by a line manager or include third-party evidence. To limit the number of times a registrant can be asked for additional evidence to meet the HCPC CPD standards. To consider providing qualitative feed-forward advice following audit submission. That the HCPC should advise employers that an appropriate level of protected time should be provided within hours of CPD, and that the HCPC should advise on the best use of protected CPD time to offer the best return on investment. Perhaps due to the current political climate here in the UK, it would seem that this study has not made the impact it should have. We believe it is time to resurrect some of these recommendations and start making the necessary changes to fully validate our regulation process in order to give the public the insurance it should provide. Policy 5. MSKR propose a phasing out of the current CPD audit process for physiotherapists and HCP registered MSK professionals. Illing and colleagues in 2016 made recommendations regarding improvements to the existing CPD portfolio audit process. MSKR instead deemed the existing model to be unfit for purpose. Therefore, working on improvements would be futile in solving the problems identified. MSKR will work with its partner organisations and the PSA to identify which regulatory body has a re-registration process closest to best practice. The General Medical Council and the General Osteopathic Council are examples of profession-specific bodies which direct PSA with direct PSA relationships, in contrast to profession which as physiotherapy and podiatry, which are answerable to the PSA via the HCPC. A working group is indicated to investigate how this direct relationship influences the upholding of quality standards. Policy 6. MSKR recommend a mandatory annual appraisal as a requirement for all MSK practitioners, which will include agreed supporting evidence aligned to HCPC or subsequent regulator standards. MSKR advocate to aligning the re-registration process with an annual appraisal system similar to that of the GMC, which involves a nominated trained appraiser and supporting evidence. GMC revalidation is not without its flaws, but demonstrates the essential requirements for such a system to be effective, namely a skilled assessor, a relationship with registrants based on trust and resources to help professionals and organisation use the process fruitfully. Policy 7. MSKR recommends that all annual appraisals should be uploaded onto a HCPC or subsequent regulator database to ensure compliance assurance. The digital infrastructure upgrade required for this is minimum, yet the improvements in accountability it would bring are significant. Services, clinicians and patients would benefit from an efficient system of mandated reflection and justification of practice to appear. Policy 8. MSKR proposed that for re-registration, the HCPC should audit 2.5% of registrants submitted appraisals against compliance standards. This is a minimum number based on the current percentage in use. For pragmatic reasons, our policy does not increase the workload of the regulator, and compared to other professions such as medicine, 100%, which 100% every 5 years, this proposed percentage is very low. Policy 9. MSKR proposed that each HCPC fitness to practice audit should include a declared percentage of registrants from a variety of settings and be represented by a percentage from each of the 48 counties in England, and an even distribution of registrants called for continuing professional development audit by therapy discipline, care sector and geographical location is assumed based on the low number of audited therapists. To understand whether this is a factor that requires correction, we first need better transparency from the HCPC as to how many clinicians from each of the aforementioned demographic categories are revalidated under the current system. Conclusion. Encouragingly, the HCPC, the Department of Health and the PSA are aware of the need to review and reform the continuing fitness to practice process. The Department of Health has proposed a new cycle of reform in the regulation of healthcare and undertook a consultation into the role of the current 9 health regulators entitled Promoting Professionalism, Reforming Regulation. Their rationale was in part to raise the profile of regulation in the public eye and improve public trust in healthcare professionals in the wake of publications like the Francis Report. Under pressure from MSKR and other organisations, the HCPC and PSA have adapted the language of reform. The following series of consultation papers make for interesting reading as they corroborate many of MSKR's findings and proposals. PSA Rethinking Regulation 2015, PSA Regulation Rethought Proposals for Reform 2016, Department of Health Promoting Professionalism Reforming Regulation 2017, PSA Right Touch Reform 2017, HCPC Consultation on HCPC Registration Fees, Department of Health Government Response to Consultation Promoting Professionalism Reforming Regulation 2019. The MSKR mantra of if not us, then who, if not now, then when, is especially poignant when it comes to this topic. The 2019 government response to the Department of Health consultation suggests that regulatory reforms are imminent. However, amongst the suggested reforms is a recommendation to simply broaden the remit of the HCPC to include more professions without mention of its current shortcomings. MSKR will fight for a seat at the table to discuss these important distinctions. Excerpts from Government Response to Consultation Promoting Professionalism Reforming Regulation 2019. Respondents suggested a wide variety of options for reconfiguring the regulatory bodies. The most frequently suggested model, with 75 responses, was to reduce the current set of regulatory bodies to three separate bodies covering doctors, nurses, and all other professionals. The second most frequent suggestion, 68 responses, was to extend the remit of HCPC. Responses range from amalgamating the smaller professions under HCPC to HCPC becoming the single regulatory body for all regulated professionals. The UK and devolved governments believe that a case can be made for fewer regulatory bodies, but acknowledge that more work is needed before bringing such a proposal forward. The UK and devolved governments will consider how best to develop proposals to reconfigure the professional regulation landscape. Any proposals to reconfigure the regulatory bodies will be subject to public consultation. That concludes the chapter, Reforming Clinical Governance.
Chapter 3, Reforming Clinical Education, by Reena Patel, with working group contributors Jane Ashbrook, Philip Barber, Marcus Barnett, Ben Ellis, Tom Flanagan, Anne Green, Claire Horner, Jesse Robinson, Rory Toogood, David Williams. Unsurprisingly, every conversation on the topic of reform visits the subject of education. Through education, consensus is formed, and just as this manifesto intends, a reformative agenda can emerge and be enacted. Since the very first Big Ours event in November 2017, roundtable discussions on all things education have been central to the MSKR movement, and yet this has not been without controversy. Whilst not distinct from each other, the following educational themes consistently emerged. Patient education, undergraduate education, clinical education, postgraduate education, continued professional development, public education. As discussed at length in chapters 1 and 4, evidence-informed practice has led us to especially value patient-centred care, holistic, biopsychosocial reasoning, and interpersonal communication skills. The only feasible mechanism to educate the MSK workforce on these and other key factors is through patient exposure coupled with reflection, a process best known as clinical education. Clinical education has long been highly regarded across healthcare and we recognise that we are far from the first group to highlight it as a priority. We are, however, seemingly uniquely concerned by the lack of urgency to improve consistency and appropriately universalise clinical educational standards. The patho-anatomical and patho-kinesiological models of diagnosis are failing to capture the complexity of the current population and the structural and physiological mechanisms of what were assumed to be corrective interventions continue to be challenged. Whilst even biomedical models and methods required practice-based clinical education for their application, there are far more inherent rights and wrongs and binary yes or no answers in these systems that better lend themselves to classroom and textbook education. MSK professionals need exposure to contemporary MSK practice and the time to reflect on what they encounter throughout their career, particularly in the current climate of pain knowledge. For these reasons, our working group prioritised clinical education and used a variety of mixed methodologies to identify problems, forge consensus and propose solutions. There is a long history of practice-based clinical education across the MSK professions, but the most integrated with frontline public healthcare is that of physiotherapy student placements. Clinical education and the supervisory process it involves is an important component of pre-registration physiotherapy education. Student physiotherapists in the United Kingdom are required to undertake at least 1,000 hours of clinical placements, which provides the opportunity for students to apply their academic knowledge and skills, as well as develop their interprofessional social skills, both necessary prerequisites for their career as a physiotherapist. Despite universal acknowledgement of their importance, securing clinical placements for students has become increasingly difficult in recent years. In a contemporary healthcare environment where clinical staff are challenged by increased workload demands, as well as an ageing and more medically complex population, there are many factors for a department to consider before offering a student placement. This can lead to inconsistency and inequality in students' learning experiences, as well as varying standards of clinical teaching and levels of motivation amongst clinical educators. Furthermore, several additional factors have been cited as potential influences of the success of a clinical placement: attitudes of the student, university preparation, self-confidence in fulfilling the clinical educator role, and the student-clinician relationship. Placements are an essential component of training and a fundamental means of developing a graduate from a layperson to an entry-level professional. Placements are incredibly rich experiences that place into context the many hours spent in the classroom and behind a desk studying. However, every placement for every student is a heterogeneous experience, as demonstrated by this account of two very different placement experiences by one of our student contributors. A tale of two MSK placements, a quote by a student contributor. Placement one. Although I was a very junior physiotherapist, I came to realise that my educator's clinical reasoning was linear and formulaic. Patients had either a weak core or weak glutes, and this was presented as the root of their problems. Placement two. This time, my clinical reasoning was constantly discussed throughout my placement. They cared about why I thought something, not just what I thought. It was clear that my educators were current with the evidence base, as they would email me relevant papers, podcasts, and other resources before discussing them with me. Clinical education quality. A selection of UK physiotherapy students were asked to reflect on what factors make for a good MSK clinical educator Their answers were bold but did not surprise our working group. They are as follows. They don't really have to be the most competent nor experienced physiotherapist. They need to be comfortable with the unknowns of MSK presentations and admit it. They should encourage a person-centred biopsychosocial approach. They are comfortable discussing and using current evidence to guide decisions. They should encourage questioning. Although they may be trained in particular treatments or have biases, they should still engage in critical discussions surrounding these and be flexible around understanding of different approaches to different patient presentations and conditions. When reflecting on the thoughts of their peers and following wider discussion with the patients, academics and clinicians in the working group, our student contributors posed the following hypothetical question that then drove several of this chapter's policies. Wouldn't it be nice if your next educator was as good as your best educator? Policy 1. MSKR propose a clinical educator online learning resource to support clinical educators offering MSK placements. The 2017 Healthcare Professions Council Standards of Education and Training stipulate that clinical educators must undertake regular training which is appropriate to their role, the learner's needs, and the delivery of the teaching outcomes of the programme. Each UK university provides clinical educator training to ensure educators have the relevant knowledge, skills, and experience to support safe and effective learning. There is significant variability, however, in how this is delivered, as no universal standard exists. MSKR propose that the MSK placement learning resources referred to above and the model for creating them have the potential to be shared with other professions, including other MSK professions, other disciplines within physiotherapy, and other allied health professionals. Medicine. Policy 2. MSKR advocate for a respected MSK educator credentialing process to be developed. The CSP previously launched the Accreditation and Clinical Education Scheme in 2004. Developed in collaboration with all UK higher education institutions, the scheme offered standardisation of the quality of training for clinical educators and allowed a physiotherapist calibre as a clinical educator be recognised formally. The scheme was discontinued because it did not gain a strong level of currency within the profession and was considered a distraction from a more strategic approach to practice-based learning. MSKR is confident that the aforementioned clinical educator resources could be delivered online or through the use of a blended learning approach. Clinical education quantity. We feel that improving MSK placement quality is a priority, but would struggle to argue that a poor placement is worse than no placement at all. In the UK, the MSK professions are growing rapidly due to rising number of university places, exemplified by 41% rise in physiotherapy places over 4 years. Developing more practice-based learning opportunities is a priority to meet future workforce demands, yet significant barriers exist that are stalling progress. Policy 3. MSKR propose a promotional campaign which highlights the positive impact of student placements on productivity in MSK services. Whilst the provision of MSK clinical placements can present operational challenges, we feel that the rewards afforded to services far outweigh the negatives. A key barrier to increasing MSK placements is the persistence of the myth that the presence of edge students inherently reduces a service's productivity. Even if this were true, the industry would have to adapt or face the prospect of integrating a severely underprepared graduate workforce. Models such as Connect Health's 2-to-1 educator system have shown it is possible to run student placements that maintain or even increase capacity. This productivity increase is not at the cost of patient and student satisfaction, which remains high and stable throughout the placements. MSKR will develop and promote the business case for productive MSK placement models and provide resources via our online clinical educator resource. Policy 4. MSKR advocate a universal code of conduct detailing the responsibilities of HEIs, clinical educators, students and service providers before, during and after student placements. It is a challenge to appropriately manage expectations for MSK placements when, as suggested, the variation in quality is so significant. The largely undiscussed roles and responsibilities of all parties involved in clinical education adds further difficulty. For example, what is explicitly expected of the student, the educator, the university and the service provider? Every placement has its own unique features that are most often covered in a local induction and discussed informally early in a placement. However, a significant number of responsibilities could be made universal across MSK placements and distributed fairly and explicitly between the four main parties. For example, we propose a local induction which is expected by the student and delivered by the clinical educator in time allocated by the service provider. We feel that expectations and responsibilities, such as the constituent parts of an induction, should be declared and signed to in a universal code of conduct. This would provide clarity over what is expected of each party involved on a placement and offer a point of reference in case of disputes, thus reducing misunderstandings that can often compromise a placement experience. The graduate skill gap. In a young and ever-evolving discipline like MSK, there are few traits more important than a commitment to lifelong learning. The idea that clinical education stops after a student's final placement is, of course, nonsense. But for those wishing to specialise in MSK practice as a graduate, the quality of learning opportunities varies significantly. The realities of the UK health economy, including an ageing and ailing population, an intergenerational inactivity crisis, and a struggling NHS with demands exceeding its budget have contributed to depleting education budgets and decreased mentoring time. Pockets of good practice exist whereby services are providing high quality teaching and mentoring to aspiring MSK professionals, but there is no scope as yet for these practices to become a blueprint for universal quality. Preceptorship is a period of structured transition for each newly qualified healthcare professional, during which he or she will be supported by a preceptor to develop his or her confidence and competence as a professional, refine skills, values and behaviours, and to continue his or her journey of lifelong learning. Providing support to healthcare professionals through preceptorship has long been advocated as a way of improving care and workforce retention, and some healthcare professionals already benefit from well-established schemes, the strongest evidence of benefits existing in the nursing profession. Benefits of preceptorship extend to all stakeholders, including the individual practitioner, the preceptor, the employer, the service user, and the profession itself. Across the MSK professions, UK HEIs currently have no responsibility to their alumni following graduation. Whilst this is not necessarily different to most degree courses, as has been mentioned previously in this document, the MSK industry is currently in a major transformative period, and a graduate cannot be expected to be a thoroughly competent MSK clinician after just 3 to 4 years of undergraduate study, only part of which is MSK focused. We can find no evidence that UK tuition fee increases and the removal of universal tuition fee bursaries for certain MSK professions have led to improved student experience, learning outcomes or employability. We feel that an extended duty of care from HEIs to their graduates is the most cost and resource efficient method of adding value to degrees in MSK disciplines. Policy 5. MSKR propose a formal universal preceptorship pathway for graduates aspiring to MSK excellence. As ever, we advocate for devolved and distributed responsibility and so propose the triad of responsibility model for postgraduate MSK preceptorship, a model which involves three key stakeholders groups committing time and other resources to pursue MSK excellence beyond registration via clinical education. Whilst it is out of the scope of this manifesto to present in detail the proposed MSKR preceptorship model, we feel it is important to outline some of the shared responsibilities and prospective rewards for HEIs, service providers and graduating clinicians. Description of a table in print. Responsibilities. Responsibilities for HEIs include resource access, teaching infrastructure, peer support networks. Responsibilities for the service provider include named preceptor, study leave, shadowing and mentoring opportunities. Responsibilities for the new graduate include commitment, self-directed study, timely submissions. Rewards. Rewards for HEIs include a decrease in syllabus pressure, assist local provider links, reduce risks of staff becoming clinically distant, reputational benefits. Rewards for the service provider, an educated workforce, local HEI links, reduce risks of staff becoming academically distant, reputational benefits. Rewards for the new graduate, MSK specific training, accelerate MSK career, retain education focus whilst applying in practice, reputational benefits. MSKR recognise the varied early career routes that can lead to MSK specialisation, from immediate MSK private practice roles to rotational NHS roles and physiotherapy apprenticeships. To account for this variety, we propose that the MSKR preceptorship programme be made available for 2 years within the first 4 years post-graduation. Policy 6. MSKR propose a process for MSK professionals who have been non-graduated to complete the credentialing element and engage with the mentoring component of the preceptorship programme detailed in the previous policy. We would argue that the MSK industry is in a state of transition with many long-assumed causes of pain, injury and disability being re-evaluated and many long-assumed influences of recovery being challenged. A way in which MSK professionals who aspire to clinical excellence can achieve this is through a recognised process of clinical education is long overdue. Existing models, such as those developed by the Musculoskeletal Association of Chartered Physiotherapists, MACP, and Institute of Osteopathy, IO, for example, should be reviewed in depth to identify successes and limitations. MSKR would like to work with these professional bodies and other partner organisations to universalise a mark of MSK competence that is appropriately detached from a single MSK disciplines and interventional modalities. A quote by new graduate physiotherapist contributor. One of the biggest challenges I faced transitioning from a student to a newly qualified physio was that I felt I had to prove my competence to my colleagues as they had such varying expectations of newly qualified physios. I believe this was mainly because in the current education system, there is such a range in quality and abilities of newly qualified physios that at the very start, you have to prove your competence until you've gained the trust of your colleagues. However, following this initial period, you are then let loose, and this can seem somewhat overwhelming as it often means you can feel unsupported whilst also often being given unrealistic caseloads with few teaching opportunities to consolidate knowledge and skills. That concludes Chapter 3, Reforming Clinical Education.
Chapter 4, Aspiring to Clinical Excellence, read by chapter author and working group lead, Matthew Wyatt. Working group contributors, Jenna Bardsley, Joe Baxter, Neil Langridge, Lewis Ludgrove, Neil Marshall, Andrew McMillan, Liz Provenich, and L. Titney. Clinical excellence is our aspiration in MSK practice, but it is difficult to define, and in doing so, we risk limiting the creative edge of our profession, or promoting an expertise model lacking evidence-informed validity. However, we believe that a definition of excellence is worth pursuing to minimise variation in practice, which creates confusion for clinicians and, more importantly, for patients. Reforming clinical excellence has been a popular table discussion at MSKR events, a popular theme for online debate, and the most popular manifesto working group with many more applications and spaces. However, for the reasons outlined above, is perhaps the most challenging topic to channel into this format. In MSK practice, both evidence and experience lead us to hold subjective assessment findings in high regard. In much the same way, the opinions of the large volume of clinicians, thinkers, and patients that have shared their subjective takes on what constitutes clinical excellence should be valued and respected. If something is important enough, it should be included, regardless of whether it suits the format of this manifesto has assumed. A reduction in all types of unwanted variation will increase value for individual patients and for populations, ensuring that the right people are given the right care at the right place at the right time, said Matthew Crippins, Director of Right Care in NHS England. Similar concerns to those mentioned above regarding best practice and clinical excellence are often voiced in discussions surrounding the popular term unwanted variation. This term has been thoroughly discussed at MSKR events to date, as well as across a variety of healthcare settings. Despite best efforts of many, conversations consistently break down when attempts are made to qualify or quantify the term unwarranted. In MSK practice, several diagnostic frameworks, treatment modalities, and reasoning heuristics have become wedded to their people's identities and sense of self. This fear, therefore, that their theta algorithm, modality, or model of care may be phased out of practice is very strong. MSKR stand by the idea of criticising ideas, but not people. Safeguards are required to avoid losing the individualisation of patient care in the generalisation of guidelines, but similarly, safeguards are required to avoid losing evidence-based facts in the individualisation of patient care, said Jack Chu, MSKR Director. In this chapter, we endeavour to acknowledge and account for this array of valid concerns and sensitivities, whilst proposing values and policies that we feel will help the MSK industry and all those working within it to aspire to clinical excellence. Our choice of term for consensus-based quality. Perhaps the most well-known use of the term clinical excellence is part of the original title for the UK's Specialist Health Authority, NICE, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence. NICE produced condition-specific guidelines through a rigorous process of evidence reviews by multidisciplinary experts. As mentioned in Chapter 1 of this manifesto, relatively few MSK conditions have NICE guidelines recommendations, yet even if they did, few would argue that clinical excellence in MSK practice is best demonstrated by to-the-letter adherence to guidelines. Certain characteristics, skills, attitudes, habits, and values appear consistently in the conversations around clinical excellence, and their anatomies appear frequently in conversations around poor practice. Whilst MSKR do not profess to have refined a methodology that fully resolves the aforementioned issues, we do not feel comfortable with the current absence of any statement of values to aspire to. MSKR are willing to state our take on the core values recognising clinically excellent practitioners, how these values are supported by the policies in adjacent chapters of this manifesto, further specific policies which we feel will optimise the chances of achieving clinical excellence across MSK practice. Defining excellence. Part one of our chapter details the 10 attributes that we feel are most recognisable in excellent MSK clinicians. These attributes are promoted and reinforced by the policies detailed in previous chapters of the manifesto, and so are internally referenced. We feel that these policies will hold clinicians accountable to these attributes, thus promoting excellence. Policy one, aspiring to clinical excellence. MSKR propose that excellence is delivered by clinicians who value patient-centered care. Excellent clinicians recognise that patient needs, patient goals, patient outcomes should be central to care. They afford patients uninterrupted time to articulate their story and work with them to identify meaningful and personalised goals. Complexity is inherent to pain because complexity is inherent to people. Excellent clinicians embrace this complexity and seek to ensure that all aspects of care in the patient's best interests and that options are thoroughly clarified and decisions sufficiently reasoned. MSKR policies to assist patient-centred care, outcome measure use, evidence policy 9, and guidelines, evidence policy 6. A holistic biopsychosocial model. Excellent clinicians recognise and account for holistic factors affecting a patient's symptoms. A biomedical model of care that is concerned exclusively with pathology or structure or system is inadequate for a contemporary understanding of MSK practice. Adaptation of the biopsychosocial patient care model that acknowledges a wider variety of specific and non-specific contributing factors to symptomology is a necessary step forward in order for MSK practice to remain cohesive within the evidence base. We add the word holistic to this term as a reminder that excellent clinicians do not reduce a patient's experience to biological, psychological, or psychosocial factors. Only a holistic, all-encompassing model that recognises and values all possible contributing variables is in line with our take on clinical excellence. MSKR policies to promote a holistic biopsychosocial model, inclusion in best practice guidelines, evidence policy 6, protected learning time, evidence policy 2, communication skills. Excellent clinicians seek to hone their communication skills in order to better articulate their thoughts to patients, colleagues and beyond. Whilst excellent clinicians over the decades have sought to optimise their communication skills to optimise outcomes, we argue that contemporary MSK practice involves a level of patient engagement far beyond that of past healthcare generations. When we perceive that the tissue integrity was strongly correlated to patient symptoms, and that the success of our manual techniques was related to our ability to positively influence scar tissue, how well we were communicating this to patients seemed to matter less. Now, an honest answer to the infamous "why does it hurt" question is often so counterintuitive to the patient that the conversation becomes a negotiation. Excellent clinicians are collaborative and persuasive. They exude credibility, not by dictating a plan, but by identifying common ground and communicating a coherent, scientifically robust route to the goal setting by patients. MSKR policies to assist with communication skills, skills for training educators, education policy 1, communication abilities monitored in appraisals, governance policy 8. Empowerment. Excellent clinicians trust patients to make informed decisions once a patient is fully equipped to make choices about their care. As MSK patients are themselves best placed to understand how the symptoms are impacting their lives and how they can influence that. A likely common goal for them is to be able to self-manage their condition. Excellent clinicians identify when it is appropriate to lead and when to stand shoulder to shoulder with patients and to be led at different stages of their recovery journey. This integration model of patient empowerment is central to a quality therapeutic alliance, as it demonstrates respect and trust between the clinician and patient. MSKR policies to promote patient empowerment, consistent use of outcome measures, evidence policy 9, universal appraisal, governance policy 8, clinical reasoning. Excellent clinicians value clinical reasoning over algorithmic decision-making. They recognise the need to hold diagnosis under review over the course of treatment so that further information can influence care in real time. Differential diagnosis would frequently be considered, as would all factors that could be making the symptoms and or the prognosis atypical. Excellent clinicians reason between the treatment method by considering the desired mechanisms of effect, the supporting evidence, the compatibility with the patient's needs, and other complex variables. Quality clinical reasoning is embodied and encompassed in all the aforementioned attributes of clinical excellence. MSKR policies to promote clinical reasoning, preceptorship training, which aims to build skills post-qualification, evidence policy 5. Access to journals and guidance throughout their career, evidence policy 2. Protected learning time, evidence policy 2. Access to journals and guidance throughout the career, evidence policy 12. Oxford evidence-based practice scale within appraisals, evidence policy 1. Excellence program, education policy 6. Evidence-informed care. Excellent clinicians value scientific inquiry and stay up to date with MSK evidence base. They endeavour to use reliable and validated examination techniques and as well as treatment methods that are demonstrated to help patients reach their goals in clinical research. In the likely absence of definitive research that suggests an indicated care plan for an individual patient, an excellent clinician delivers patient-centred care that is informed by evidence. Evidence-informed clinicians do not rely on specific guidance and compliance with diagnostic criteria, but deliver care that is plausible in terms of scientifically known within MSK and overlapping fields of study. MSKR policies to assist evidence-informed care. Improved journal access, evidence policy 12. Best practice guidelines, evidence policy 6. Additional NICE guidelines, evidence policy 8, and protected time, evidence policy 2. Lifelong learning. Excellent clinicians consolidate their knowledge, but do not assume they know most of what is to be known in MSK practice. The confidence that a mathematician or physicist may have about base reality and the coherence of rules would be blind arrogance in the still developing and changing landscape of MSK practice. MSKR policies to assist lifelong learning, annuals and appraisals throughout the career, governance policy 8, access to journals, evidence policy 12, protecting learning time, evidence policy 2, formal preceptorship program, education policy 6, universal postgraduate opportunities, education policy 7. Reflective practice. Excellent clinicians recognise the need to pause and reflect on the care they deliver, their development and the balance of the broader skill set. Reflective practice assists self-awareness, which in turn often enhances the approachability and humility of the clinician. MSKR policies to assist reflective practice. Submitted reflections for annual appraisals, governance policy 8. Protected learning time, evidence policy 2. Online learning skills for clinical educators, education policy 1. Critical thinking. Excellent clinicians recognise the variety of options available to them and their patients at any given moment. Therefore, the ability to think critically, rationally, objectively, and where necessary, sceptically about a topic or decision is a valuable asset. MSKR policies to assist critical thinking. Access to journals, evidence policy 12. Best practice guidance availability, evidence policy 6. Preceptorship program, education policy 5. Shared decision making. Excellent clinicians understand that their broad professional expertise is different to the narrow perspective expertise of each individual patient. The lived experience of each patient is relevant to their presentation and their journey to recovery. Therefore, understanding at its best paramount to the lived experience of each patient is relevant to their presentation and journey to recovery. Therefore, understanding it as best possible is paramount. Excellent clinicians respect the patient's expertise and allow decision-making process to be an equal partner towards working towards set goals. MSKR policies to enhance shared decision-making. Outcome measure use in all MSK patients, evidence policy 9. As discussed in the introduction to this chapter, it is deemed by some to be a controversial to even point out the attributes of an excellent clinician. However, if we simply examine the direct opposite of our top 10 attributes, they go a long way towards describing the characteristics we might recognise in a poor MSK clinician, without merely stating the more obvious objectives such as unsafe, incompetent and unprofessional. Achieving excellence. We hope that our attempt to define clinical excellence moves the conversation forward in an area that is too often stalled due to conflict over small differences. Even this non-exhaustive set of attributes was to be fully embraced and promoted, we feel that further reforms would still be required to achieve clinical excellence. MSKR feel that the enacting of the following 4 key policies would lead to a higher consistency of excellence care and would support the reforms outlined in the preceding chapters. Policy 2. MSKR proposes a central digital library of best practice guidance for common MSK presentations that are efficiently peer-reviewed for quality, clarity and brevity. As acknowledged in the first chapter of this manifesto, best practice guidance is pragmatic synthesis of the available evidence applied to real-world clinical contexts. Every day, patients present to MSK clinicians with some version of the question, what is the best way to get this/me better? Understandably, few would accept the answer, we don't know yet. The science is very young. But for most MSK conditions, especially though in terms of dose response, patient profile, timing, this would be the honest one. If we accept clinical excellence can and does exist, and that is delivered by clinicians whose attributes match the list detailed previously, the best practice guidance created by the collaborations between clinicians we consider excellent would be of value. The strongest argument that we have encountered against such guidance is based on the fear that this becomes recipe-like, non-critical, and risks being under-reviewed. Some feel while we risk replacing old dogma with new dogma, that will be equally difficult to replace. We recognise this risk, but argue if this was the case, the contributing clinicians would not meet the above criteria and would not therefore be excellent by MSKR's definition, namely failing to demonstrate critical thinking, evidence-informed care, shared decision-making, and prioritising clinical reasoning over recipes. MSKR feel that the enacting of this policy would promote clinical excellence by improving public and professional access to high-quality, evidence-informed guidance. Policy 3. MSKR propose a promotional campaign to highlight the unifying nature of functional rehabilitation as a core component of healthcare. In many of the discussions about MSK clinical excellence throughout this project, we've consistently noticed the commonalities between contemporary best practice across therapy disciplines. MSKR contributors working in neurology, elderly medicine, respiratory, women's health, and paediatric care have frequently mentioned similarities between the core treatments between these disciplines. Individualised functional rehabilitation that is context sensitive, progressively scaled, and goal focused is emerging as a central tenet of therapeutic care and should be championed as such. The aforementioned subspecialities have appeared increasingly distinct over the many years for a variety of reasons, including postgraduate specialisation courses and specialist interest group formation. In addition to this, MSKR also reflected on the fact that the following therapy disciplines traditionally seen across physiotherapy, osteopathy, sports rehabilitation, and chiropractic are often strongly associated with specialised treatment modalities. For example, respiratory, airway clearance, active cycular breathing techniques, and suction. Neurology, tone management, bone bath concept handling. Women's health, internal soft tissue techniques, and pelvic floor retraining. Musculoskeletal, manual therapy, electrotherapy, and corrective exercise. Whilst all of the above remain prevalent in each discipline, and each could be considered to be evidence-supported in certain circumstances, researchers reveal various limitations in terms of the specific and corrective influences we have on patients with these techniques. With this in mind, many therapists across disciplines have embraced human complexity and made the primary rationale for treatment to scale an individual's function from where they are at this given moment in their life to where they wish to be post-treatment. Quality rehabilitation accounts for the commonalities of basic human needs, such as breathing, eating, sleeping, reproducing, washing, moving, working, combined with the diversity of each individual's requirements and goals. MSKR plan to work with partner organisations across the professions and disciplines to promote graded functional rehabilitation as a vital feature of health and social care. Policy 4. MSKR propose a review of the term chartership as used in physiotherapy and of the criteria required to qualify for chartership. Chartered status originates from the Royal Charter issued to professional bodies by the monarch on the advice of the Privy Council. Over a thousand professional organisations have been granted charter status since its inception in 1230. However, fewer than 80 charters allow for individuals who meet certain standards to use the prefix chartered ahead of their professional identity as a self-descriptor. For example, the Royal College of Chiropractors received the Royal Charter in 2012, yet there is no such title as a chartered chiropractor. In 1920, King George V granted the Royal Charter to the Chartered Society of Massage and Medical Gymnastics, the organisation known since 1944 as the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy, the CSP. The CSP also have an individual chartership designation, granting it the ability to award charter status to individual members. In the UK, the prefix chartered is considered a mark of professional competence awarded to an individual as a relevant distinction to its non-chartered form. The two most commonly encountered examples in Britain are chartered accountants and chartered surveyors. Chartership in these disciplines requires an undergraduate degree, 3 years in trade experience, a submitted report of professional competence, a pass grade to chartership examinations, a unanimous decision by a panel of peers to grant chartership, routine validation by monitored appraisal of CPD activity, payment and membership organisational fees. Use of the term chartered physiotherapist requires an undergraduate degree, payment and membership by organisation fees. This inconsistency in requirements seems to be a legacy problem that other chartered institutions have sought to correct for. For example, the Institute of Physics, 2001, and the Royal Science Council, 2004, recognised in the early 2000s that a higher minimum standard must be set for the use of the charter prefix in a field. The organisation has decided that master's level study, 3 years postgraduate experience, and routine revalidation through proof of CPD would form the new entry level criteria. Individuals who did not meet these standards at the point of revalidation could not use the prefix. The Privy Council granted amendments to the entry level for use of the title Chartered Physicist in 2001 and the use of the title Chartered Clinical Scientist in 2004. Interestingly, the Privy Council itself recognises the set entry level for chartership to be consistent so not to devalue the prefix. The Privy Council Office kindly provided the following quote. Privy Council policy is that the criteria for individual chartered status should be broadly similar across the professions, e.g. chartered accountant, chartered engineer, chartered surveyor, etc. Charters and chartered titles have traditionally been linked to academic qualifications, and most modern chartered bodies that intend to individual charter status as a robust professional qualification set the entry level at master's degree level or equivalent skills and experience, and reevaluate holders on a regular basis to ensure continued professional competency and development, with only practicing professionals allowed to hold the designation. The Privy Council Office. MSKR propose a review of the term chartered, primarily due to concern that its use may be misleading the public. In fact, some of the strongest voices in favour of this policy from the MSKR's patient contributors. Patients do not know what chartered in relation to physiotherapy means. but chartered, as it used generally, implies a credible distinction. To learn that a title you can essentially buy completely undermines the credibility of the whole profession. Chartership surely needs to mean something or not exist. As it stands, it is not an accurate description of the professional status. It's an embarrassment to the profession that's misleading to the patients it's meant to reassure. Sam Williams, patient contributor. We recognise the challenges that a movement to change the terms of the Royal Charter might face, not least the collaboration required to engage our non-MSK physiotherapy colleagues who would also be affected. This is why MSKR calls for a thorough review, which involves and includes all relevant organisations that are interested in raising quality standards to achieve clinical excellence. Policy 5. MSKR advocates for all MSK job roles to be accessible by professionals who can demonstrate they meet the criteria outlined by the role, regardless of profession. As our organisational name suggests, and this manifesto has outlined, MSKR feel that the MSK industry at large and the constituent MSK professions must do more to improve quality and consistency of care delivered to the public. We do, however, recognise professional organisations representing MSK clinicians care deeply about patients and we all seek to help. But the shortcomings We do, however, recognise that the professional organisations representing MSK clinicians care deeply about the patients we all seek to help, but the shortcomings do occur despite best efforts. We have found no evidence that clinical excellence is consistently recognisable in any qualification, subspecialty or professional identity. We've instead noted that individuals from all professional backgrounds have the capacity to be clinically excellent. Sadly, also, their capacity to emulate poor practice. No professional organisation has demonstrated a quality assurance standard that has helped its members stand out consistently from their MSK peers of different stripes, nor has any specific qualification type stood out as worthy of promoting in this document. Instead, we propose that in light of the increasing societal burden of MSK conditions, it is in the public best interest that MSK job roles to be accessible by professionals who can demonstrate they meet the criteria outlined by the job specification, regardless of profession. Considering the increasing evidence of comorbidity and other contributory health factors affecting MSK care, a minimum qualification standard, a minimum regulatory standard, is important to ensure clinical safety. MSKR propose a Bachelor of Science, BSc, undergraduate degree, or an accepted international equivalent combined with accreditation through the Professional Standards Authority would be a sensible minimum standard. Beyond this, the specifics of the vacant MSK role should be detailed through each personal specification with a view to the candidate being recruited based on individual competence. We feel that this policy will raise standards and promote clinical excellence by disrupting the complacency that can appear in the absence of competition. It is in all of our best interest for the very best person for the job to be in the post through as efficient means as possible. The best person for the job may well be somebody from a profession not immediately associated to that post. For example, the best person for a Band 5 junior MSK primary care physiotherapist might be a sports rehabilitator. The best person for a Band 7 MSK lower limb extended scope podiatrist role may well be a physiotherapist. The best person for Band 8 MSK first contact practitioner may be an osteopath. We are certainly not the first organisation to advocate for competency-based recruitment, and we recognise that some organisations are ahead of the curve on this policy. However, it remains a common practice for an MSK job adverts to explicitly state a profession when others could realistically be considered. MSKR recognise the embryonic nature of some of the policies in this manifesto, but this is not one of them. Forward-thinking service providers and their local public are already reaping the rewards of this change. If we lose dated assumptions and ask the correct questions of the existing recruitment structures, we can raise standards by simply redacting job title on job adverts. Putting a professional's interest over public interest is the equivalent of putting party over country or country over humanity interprofessional tribalism in MSK is needless and counterproductive, so let's instead build a multidisciplinary coalition around shared values and reform MSK practice for the better. Jack Chu, MSKR Director. This chapter lays out the criteria which we believe are indicative of excellent practice and suggests mechanisms by which this can be established and sustained for the benefit of our patients and our professional pride and integrity. Excellent. Safeguards are required to avoid losing the individualisation of patient care in the generalisation of guidelines. But similarly, safeguards are required to avoid losing evidence-based facts in the individualisation of patient care. Jack Chu, MSKR Director.
Chapter 5, Exerting Influence. Chapter author and working group lead, Ashley James. Working group contributors, Adam Dobson, Leslie Holdsworth, OBE, Liz Jen, Adrian McGregor, Chris Mercer, Emma Park, John Ryan, Brad Skeynes, and Ash Shattuck. The MSKR Manifesto for Reform makes a clear case for change and details specific policies to bring this about. Change, however, relies on the ability of these ideas to influence people. We are aiming to make a persuasive case that influences individuals who then in turn influence their friends, colleagues, teams, services, organisations, and so forth. Throughout the development of this manifesto and at all previous MSKR events, a frequent concern has kept us thinking pragmatically. It's all well and good in theory, but how can we influence that change? We feel that patient care can be positively influenced by reforming the way in which MSK industry seeks to influence clinicians and exerts its influence through the media. As the previous chapter discussed at length, unwarranted clinical variation is an issue in MSK practice, but how might we best influence the clinicians concerned and make a persuasive case to change behaviours? If the care delivered is varied, is it any wonder that the media representation of MSK practice and pathology is also varied? Why wouldn't inconsistent messages from clinicians and inconsistent messages in the media contribute to a huge variety of pain beliefs amongst the people who subsequently become MSK patients? Whilst we do not have a valid method to identify just how causal this inconsistency is on society's perception of MSK issues, if we wish to aspire to the accuracy, then surely we can improve the ways in which we look to influence opinion. This chapter, therefore, details policies in these three overlapping areas: influencing clinicians, influencing media, and influencing patients. Influencing clinicians. MSKR proposes a trusted communication infrastructure for private, professional discussions with accountable users and administrators. Adoption of evidence-based practice in MSK Health is challenging due to a number of documented factors, including poor access to information, limited appraisal skills, and ever-increasing service demands. Additionally, MSKR recognises that there are barriers with regards to interprofessional communication, platform inclusivity, and varied representation, all issues that can surely be improved in an age of connectivity and digital expansion. MSK clinicians work in a variety of environments across the UK, such as the NHS, private clinics, sports clubs, and in patients' homes in the community. Whilst this is a great indication of the versatility of MSK care, we hold concern that there has the potential to foster siloed forms of practice which can stifle critical thinking in favour of practices based on convention, marketing, and anecdote. This, in part, may account for the high levels of unwarranted clinical variation seen across MSK practice and discussed thoroughly in the previous chapter. A frequent point expressed at MSKR events has been the lack of appropriate communication infrastructure for those interested in consolidating MSK best practice through discussing and resource sharing. An increasing mode of communication, increasingly used by those interested in MSK practice, is social media. Platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram offer health professionals an accessible place to communicate with peers, researchers, educators, and patients across the MSK industry. By design, these platforms are inclusive and open access, but do so by fully being fully public and potentially too exposed to be appropriate for some clinical discussions. Several MSK member organisations have developed closed platforms such as ICSP, Interactive Chartered Society of Physiotherapy, to offer their members the opportunity to connect with each other online away from public visibility. These closed platforms are exclusively for members of specific professions and therefore inherently exclude patients and other MSK interested individuals of different backgrounds. They also suffer some of the same issues as social media in that they permit anonymity and therefore cannot always be considered accountable platforms. MSKR recommends communication infrastructure that appropriately corrects for these issues. The MSKR digital community platform is being developed with a brief which is specifically states that the forum and resource library is to be inclusive, accountable, and appropriately sheltered. Influence in the media. MSKR will develop and support a credible network of media-trained MSK experts available to journalists, producers, and broadcasters. Frontline MSK clinicians know just how easy it is for the best-laid rehab plans to be derailed by a newspaper article or a TV advert. A classic example being a treatment plan involving a patient engagement in active care with sustained commitment over a period of months and education to change that person's perception of what the problem is. The patient then encounters an anecdote broadcast in the media highlighting a much simpler, though not necessarily evidence-supported solution to their problem that could be administered passively. Those interested in MSK reforms have their work cut out to change deep-rooted societal perceptions around pain and injury. It is therefore important to identify ways in which we can improve the quality and consistency of public MSK messaging in the media. MSKR will respond with a press release within 48 hours to news stories related to MSK field. This is to ensure that an expert take on the matter is made available as a supportive or counter-narrative. Some heartening news is that medical and academic professionals are among the most trusted in the UK, whilst journalism and broadcasting professionals are amongst the least. Whether or not these ratings are deserved is a topic of much debate, but it could be argued that whilst this trust-distrust ratio exists, any chance to get MSK voices heard in the media would have significant reward, especially if a trusted opinion was seen to oppose an untrusted journalistic one. MSKR's network of clinicians, patients, educators, and researchers will support a media action group to present credible press releases to media organisations and, in instances of false advertising, submit complaints to Ofcom. MSKR will host quarterly update sessions for journalists and other media personnel in which developments and insights in the field of MSK practice will be shared and accurate stories promoted. These short events will take place live and online and be promoted to health and science reporters as a priority to attend, with a summary of each event's talking points also distributed to a list of interested parties, which we have developed as part of our wider MSKR stakeholder map project. Influence in patients. It has long been noted in the literature that healthcare professionals have a considerable and enduring influence on the beliefs of patients they encounter. It is important, therefore, that clinicians are mindful of their language in the consultation room, but also in the public sphere, especially as patients are increasingly using more direct sources of to access news. For example, currently more than half of UK adults use social media as their primary source of news, and over 65% of 18 to 35-year-olds consider online resources to be their primary source of news. Many have hoped that patient information websites will provide the remedy to this misinformation. However, these are not without their problems. A 2019 systematic review studied 79 public-facing websites from six English-speaking countries and found that only 43.28% of their recommendations for lower back pain could be considered accurate. This is worryingly low, especially for a condition with far greater expert consensus than many other MSK conditions. MSKR advocate the involvement of patients as equal partners in all MSK projects, organisations and research studies. Quote from Adrian McGregor, patient contributor. I had physio, I had chiro, I had surgery, but I still somehow had nobody to work with. I was on my own, trying to figure out how much to do and when to exercise, but you just can't do it on your own. Throughout this manifesto, we have proposed a model of supporting patients to lead their care and empower them to manage their MSK conditions. For too long, patient voices have been absent from discussions, and so MSKR support patient partnership projects, such as the patient director role within Sussex MSK Partnership and the patient editor role at the Journal of Orthopaedic and Sports Physical Therapy. Quote, patients as partners in research, it's the right thing to do, 2019. Rather than researchers informing patients and clinicians about condition and instructing patients how to behave, engaging in a way that promotes sharing and understanding of that patient's unique lived experience can mean that patients, clinicians, and researchers answer key clinical questions together. MSKR proposed further promotion of first-person patient advocacy and the sharing of public experiences within MSK care. Patients are the best narrators of their own stories and therefore a powerful and underutilized resource for helping others better treat and manage MSK problems. A shared language to suit a layperson may be necessary in some instances. However, MSK patients have individual agency and so should be treated with the respect and dignity they deserve. In many instances, patients whose journeys have led them to study their MSK condition and the contributing factors affecting their experience have a better understanding of MSK evidence base and its application than many clinicians. Patient quote, Tina Price. When you live in pain and you read something about how pain works, you try to fit your personal pain experiences into what you are reading, or at least I do. And when you just can't fit your experience, then this can lead to confusion, frustration, and despair, or at least it has for me. This chapter proudly states a number of policies that we feel will better influence clinicians, the media, and therefore patients to improve healthcare outcomes in MSK practice. These policies seek to refine and then broadcast messages and so rely heavily on the policies of the previous four chapters to raise standards. Failure to coordinate the action that will follow this manifesto could lead to high-quality clinical reforms that are not shared widely and therefore do not influence wider system change, or worse, an amplification of unreformed, low-quality practice which would be rightly met with frustration by all stakeholders. Let's look to mitigate this from the very start. MSKR shall remain open and inclusive to all interested parties by inviting partnership with any MSK organisation and allowing membership of any individual, regardless of their background. MSKR shall pursue the policies in this manifesto as prioritised by the voting membership with thoughtful, pragmatic activism.
Conclusion. A quote from Jack Chu, the MSKR director. The MSKR Manifesto for Reform is the best efforts of many passionate clinicians, patients, educators, and policymakers to demonstrate consensus in a time of disagreement, unity in a time of division, and bravery in a time of cowardice. A final reminder of our core question. If we were to enact these policies, would MSK practice improve? We believe so and look forward to working with you on the action plans that can make that happen. For too long, there has been a lack of clarity over what MSK reformers stand for. For too long, there has been a lack of clarity over what MSK reformers stand for. And for too long, there has been a place for unfair critics to misrepresent our goals. The MSKR Manifesto for Reform certainly won't and shouldn't end the arguments that rage on across these topics, but it does offer a point of reference for those who are interested in changing MSK practice for the better. Even best efforts to be thorough were bound to leave us wondering if there's any stone unturned or a discussion point unexplored. This Manifesto for Reform sought to offer an answer to the complex problem of inherent complexity. The working group and chapter themes emerged from early discussions at MSKR events, as these were the key areas in which reform was felt to be most needed. It is our opinion that several important things need to change simultaneously. namely the MSK industry's relationship with evidence, the underlying clinical governance structures, the delivery of clinical education, the sense of what clinical excellence looks like, and the way in which we seek to exert influence on wider society. We hope that we have justified these priorities in this document, but we know that these categories are not exhaustive. An interesting challenge faced by the authors of this manifesto is that all five chapters struggle to avoid overlap with their counterparts. For example, every policy is informed by evidence and seeks to influence change primarily through education. Various models, diagrams, and formats have been explored, and so we hope that this style and layout has been readable and enjoyable. Having realised that overlap was inevitable, but that a degree of categorising was necessary, we were very fortunate to work with versatile and understanding contributors whose cooperation has been amazing to witness. In producing this document, our team of contributors have faced a great deal of opposition, yet very little of it has been coherent. A great example of this is the accusation that the MSKR movement is simultaneously utopian, radical, and blinkered, whilst being bland, samey, and broad. We hope that you found this work persuasive and can recognise that the proposed structure of MSK Reform as a grassroots MSK think tank is one worth supporting. Without mass membership, this manifesto is the high watermark of the Big R's project. If you want to see us promote these ideas widely and lobby for their implementation, then join the movement today. Because if not us, then who? And if not now, then when?
Our policies. Chapter 1, Evidence. Developing an evidence-informed culture. Policy 1. MSKR advocate a rollout of the Oxford EVP framework, with each clinician's involvement evidenced in personal appraisals and integrated into performance measures.
Policy 2. MSKR will aim for all MSK service providers to ensure at least 5% of clinical staff's working week is for protected learning time, approximately 2 hours full-time equivalent, to be annualised and stated in job descriptions.
Policy 3. MSKR propose a move to cooperative contracts between universities and service providers for each MSK service employing 20 or more clinical staff.
Policy 4. MSKR will encourage universities to grant full literature access to a named research champion in all services employing 20 or more clinical staff.
Reducing unwarranted variation in clinical practice. Policy 5. MSKR will promote the need for additional NICE guidelines relating to MSK disorders.
Policy 6. MSKR propose increased use of knowledge translation strategies.
Policy 7. The MSKR Evidence Working Group will be available for consultation with MSKR spokespeople, journalists, and members of the public interested in wider promotion of best practice.
Measurement and accountability. Policy 8. MSKR advocate mandating the universal use of patient-orientated outcome measures in UK MSK healthcare.
Policy 9. MSKR support Clinical Audit Awareness Week and pledges to produce specific MSK service audit resources as well as examples of MSK service audits to coincide with Clinical Audit Awareness Week on an annual basis.
Narrowing the clinical academic divide. Policy 10. MSKR advocate for the development of more clinical academic posts across the UK.
Policy 11. MSKR proposes the development of an up-to-date directory of resources for MSK funding streams.
Policy 12. MSKR support the proliferation of open access journals and will lobby for a reformed business model to improve clinicians' access to evidence.
Patient-centred decision-making. Policy 13. MSKR propose accessible mechanisms for patients to contribute to service audits and research projects relevant to their condition, circumstances, and interests.
Policy 14. MSKR support the integration of patients into decision-making structures in order to improve patient-centred care and governance in MSK services.
Chapter 2, Governance, Creating Robust Systems. Policy 1. MSKR recommend that the physiotherapist be included in the CQC list of registrants required to be registered under the regulated activity of treatment of disease, disorders or injury.
Policy 2. MSKR advocate for the development of an accreditation process from which MSK services can aspire to a quality standard mark.
Policy 3. MSKR propose that all providers of MSK services mandate governance training into their induction programs and ongoing mandatory training.
Policy 4. MSKR support the integration of clinical governance education in every level of MSK courses.
Policy 5. MSKR advocate for the development of a national MSK clinical governance framework, which is applicable to all who practice in the MSK speciality.
Creating accountable clinicians. Policy 6. MSKR propose a phasing out of the current continuing fitness to practice process for physiotherapists and HCPC registered MSK professions.
Policy 7. MSKR recommend a mandatory annual appraisal as a requirement for all MSK practitioners, which will include agreed supporting evidence aligned to HCPC or subsequent regulator standards.
Policy 8. MSKR recommend that all annual appraisals should be uploaded onto an HCPC or subsequent regulator database to ensure compliance assurance.
Policy 9. MSKR proposed that for revalidation, the HCPC or subsequent regulator should audit 2.5% of a registrant's submitted appraisals against compliance standards.
Policy 10. MSKR proposed that each HCPC fitness to practice audit should include a declared percentage of registrants from a variety of settings and be represented by a percentage from each of the 48 counties in the UK.
Chapter 3. Education. Clinical education quality. Policy 1. MSKR propose a clinical educator online learning resource to support clinical educators offering MSK placements.
Policy 2. MSKR advocate for a respected MSK educator credentialing process to be developed.
Clinical education quantity. Policy 3. MSKR propose a promotional campaign which highlights the positive impact of student placements on productivity of MSK services.
Policy 4. MSKR advocates a universal code of conduct detailing the responsibilities of higher education institutions, clinical educators, students and service providers before, during and after student placements.
Graduate skill gap. Policy 5. MSKR propose a formal universal preceptorship pathway for graduates aspiring to MSK excellence.
Policy 6. MSKR propose a process for MSK professionals who have been long graduated to complete the credentialing element and engage with the mentoring component of the preceptorship programme detailed in the previous policy.
Chapter 4. Excellence. Defining excellence. Policy 1. MSKR propose that clinical excellence is delivered by clinicians who value patient-centered care, a holistic biopsychosocial model, communication skills, empowerment, clinical reasoning, evidence-informed care, lifelong learning, reflective practice, critical thinking, and shared decision-making.
Achieving excellence. Policy 2. MSKR proposes a central digital library of best practice guidance for common MSK presentations that are efficiently peer-reviewed for quality, clarity, and brevity.
Policy 3. MSKR proposes a promotional campaign to highlight the unifying nature of functional rehabilitation as a core component of healthcare.
Policy 4. MSKR propose a review of the term chartership as used in physiotherapy and of the criteria required to qualify for chartership.
Policy 5. MSKR advocates for all MSK job roles to be accessible by professionals who can demonstrate that they meet the criteria outlined by the role, regardless of profession.
Chapter 5, Influence. Influencing clinicians. Policy 1. MSKR proposes a trusted communication infrastructure for private professional discussions with accountable users and administrators.
Influencing media. Policy 2. MSKR will develop and support a credible network of media-trained MSK experts available to journalists, producers, and broadcasters.
Policy 3. MSKR will respond with a press release within 48 hours to news stories related to the MSK field. This is to ensure that an expert take on the matter is made available as a supportive or counter-narrative.
Policy 4. MSKR will host quarterly update sessions for journalists and other media personnel in which developments and insights in the field of MSK practice will be shared and accurate stories encouraged.
Influencing patients. Policy 5. MSKR advocate the involvement of patients as equal partners in all MSK projects, organisations and research studies.
Policy 6. MSKR propose further promotion of first-person patient advocacy and the sharing of public experiences with MSK care. Mm-hmm.